Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department is releasing a new survey today that examines the public's attitude about a wide variety of hunting, fishing, and wildlife issues. The survey shows that many Vermonters, both hunters and non-hunters, are very concerned about how water quality issues and the loss of habitat will affect wildlife throughout the state. Today in the program, we'll look at the results of the survey. Our guests are Lewis Porter, who is the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and also Mark Scott, who's the director of wildlife at the department. Great to have you both here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. My pleasure.
Now, in just a moment, we're going to hear from Mark Duda, who conducted the survey. But first, just a couple of quick questions for our in-studio guests. Commissioner Porter, why did you want to have this survey done? What are you hoping to learn from this survey?
Well, we do these kind of surveys periodically, Bob, to try to get a sense of what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong in terms of reaching out to the public, getting input from the public, and addressing the issues that are of great concern to Vermonters, both hunters and anglers, also general Vermonters, in terms of wildlife issues. As you mentioned, there's a huge variety of challenges, issues, and concerns that face those of us, including in my department, who manage and oversee wildlife, and we're just trying to get a sense of the best way to reach out to people and to hear from them on those matters.
So as you looked at the survey results, were there some data that just jumped out at you and said, boy, this is important?
Yeah, there were a few things that we viewed as quite positive and we're happy to see, and a few areas where we obviously have some work to do as well. And among those that I think are positive and important are that non-hunting and angling residents are reaching out to us at almost the same rate as those who hunt, fish, and trap. And we are providing information, responses, help to those Vermonters who don't do those activities at almost the same rate that we do to those who do. That surprised me a little bit. It made me happy to see that we are reaching them. We also see that 59% of residents say they either know a great deal or know something about the department. For a fairly small department that has an important but limited focus, that's great to see that we're reaching out to people. Some of those areas that I think we are going to go back and work on and look at is our issues around whether people are satisfied with our responses. They often are, but sometimes they're not, and whether they feel like the department is in touch with the needs of wildlife in Vermont.
And Mark Scott, are there some results that jumped out for you?
I think with the result overall, that what I was most pleasantly happy and glad to see is that there still is a strong support from Vermont citizens out there for wildlife management, and especially some of the tools that we need to manage wildlife species so they're in proper balance with the land and the habitat, i.e. being hunting and trapping. What's concerning us in this state is this disconnect between people and the outdoors. And we're finding more and more people that don't understand rural roots and traditions in this state. And they're more living more of an urban lifestyle. But to find that higher percentage are still supporting our traditional techniques to manage wildlife, that was eye-popping to me to see it stay there over the years. I really expected to decline because they're complicated issues. When you're dealing with wildlife management, it's not an easy science. It takes in social issues, economic issues, population numbers. People get more concerned about individual animals, where we can't, as a Fish and Wildlife Agency, we want to work more at the population level because it's sustainable. I mean, we all own pets, dogs and cats, so I understand people's thinking that way. But that's a challenge, and I spend a lot of my time dealing with public who needs to be more educated about how wildlife exists out in a natural system and with humans. We're part of that system. So that's what really popped out at me. I was pleasantly surprised that there still is a strong support.
Commissioner talked about almost the same percentage of the general population contacting the Fish and Wildlife Department as opposed to hunters, fishers, fishermen, and others.
Right.
But are they contacting the department for different reasons? Are the hunters and anglers interested in license information and what's going on, whereas the general population is, I got a problem with wildlife in my neighborhood?
Yeah. The second ladder is definitely increasing. I'll argue about that, that people are being challenged to live with wildlife, whether it's a black bear in their backyard, a raccoon, deer getting in their gardens, woodchucks. We get those calls all the time to deal with that. The other side that I'm seeing that's different is particular hunters, but I've got to credit people who don't hunt because it's hard to – any household in Vermont, the odds are going to be you may have someone else beyond yourself that hunts or you know some family member. But people are becoming more and more concerned about habitat, about land, bigger issues. When I started with the department in the 1980s, it seemed to be all about numbers of animals. We've brought back a lot of number. We're dealing with a lot of bear in the state, a lot of deer. Turkeys are seem to be in everyone's backyard now. But I'm pleasantly surprised that people are realizing there's a connection to our animals out there in the land that they need to survive.
Well, let's turn now to Mark Duda, who conducted the survey for Responsive Management. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I wish I was there in person.
Oh, we wish you were, too. So tell us a little bit about the methodology of this survey, how many people were surveyed, the margin of error, and then how you selected both folks from the general population and people who like to fish and hunt.
Absolutely. First, thanks for having me. The official title of the study is called Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife Media and Communications Survey. But essentially, it's the very issues that you've been talking about. How can the department better understand Vermont residents' communications needs and their opinions on their communications? But the survey went so much further than that. It was quite a lengthy survey, sometimes upwards of 10 to 15 minutes. I'd like to point out that, you know, one of the biggest criticisms of government of late past decade or two is that governments don't listen to people. And what's so great about this survey is this is a no better way to go out to the public in a very scientific manner and listen to what your constituents say, both residents of the state, 18 years old and older, as well as hunters and anglers. So sometimes you hear people say, oh, government doesn't listen to us. Well, in this case, the department is doing that very thing. The Vermont Department of Fish and Wildlife is going out and asking people in a very scientific, unbiased manner, what do you think? And there's some things where people say, you're doing a great job here, and there's other things where it's saying, you know, we could do a better job. Mark mentioned one in terms of the nuisance wildlife. There's sort of a growing concern about nuisance wildlife. What do we do about it? How does the department handle all of these calls? So that's sort of just a background on the study. Just as background on me, my name is Mark Damian Duda. I'm the Executive Director of Response Management. And we've been doing this type of work for now 30 years. We're going on 30 years of studying how people in the U.S. and various states, we've worked in every single state, how they view wildlife. And so we've done this a number of times. This was a scientific telephone survey. It was based on landline as well as cell phones. In fact, we interview people now more on cells than on landlines. It was based on the proper proportions that people own them. It was called a probability-based random sample, which essentially means that every person in Vermont who has a phone, which is upwards of 95% plus, has an equal probability of answering. And so what we wanted to do is use this method to make sure that everybody was represented in the survey. Everybody had an equal opportunity to be contacted. Great response from people. Vermont's an easy state to do studies like this in. Sometimes when you go to California or New York or Texas, it's a little bit harder. But in Vermont, people are very, very interested in the topic. So we got great response rates. People stuck with the study. It was a phone survey, as I said. They're still the best way to do surveys if you really want to get input. Sometimes people put out web-based surveys, and anybody can answer. So you have one group who really feels strongly about one way, and they all answer it. And, you know, those results are biased. They're not mm-hmm. representative of what's really out there. Mail surveys anymore, a lot of people just aren't answering mail surveys. And more importantly, you know, a lot of people don't want to say this, but there's a lot of people who don't have great reading skills. And so you end up biasing against people who are afraid to read long surveys that are complicated. So telephone surveys like this, scientific telephone surveys that are probability-based random samples are still the number one way to get high-quality information.
And, Mark, you mentioned that you do this in a bunch of other states. I'm wondering, you know, in what way are the results in Vermont similar to other states, and in what way are they different? Let's start with the similar ways. Can you see some similarities between Vermont and other states?
From a similarity perspective, it'd be easier. Vermont residents are very outdoorsy. I mean, 73% of the state's residents consciously view wildlife around their home. 69% go hiking. 50% birdwatch. So from a similarity difference perspective, I mean, Vermont residents are outdoors folks. They have water resources and water quality and habitat loss as their most important issues. That's fairly similar to other states. It was similar in terms of urban-rural differences. We didn't find really huge differences in Vermont on urban-rural differences like we might in California or Florida. But you still find those in terms of less participation in hunting and fishing and trapping. But not as large as we see in other states. In differences, you asked about what we saw in difference.
Yes.
Some really nice levels of awareness of the agency. Not everyone is aware of the agency, but very high percentages are. In terms of differences, we saw very high levels of support and satisfaction with the agency. Agency is doing a really good job in terms of reaching out to people, although communications is always tough. You know, whenever I do these studies in states, communications is always the toughest nut to crack. You know, the agencies can manage for deer populations. They can do a lot of really good scientific work because we're really good at it. From a communications perspective, communications is expensive and it's hard and it requires a lot of people. And so, you know, communications always comes up as one of the more important issues that people are demanding of agencies. They want to know more. They want to know more about wildlife because they care about it.
Mark Duda conducted this new survey for the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. Mark, many thanks for being on the program today.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
As usual, there are a lot of folks who would like to weigh in on this subject or on lots of the different issues that surround the fish and wildlife community. So let's start with Lark in Craftsbury. Hi, Lark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Thank you. Nice to be here. I'm just a little concerned about the survey being completely accurate or skewed. I noticed on some of the questions, particularly number two, they kind of lump the wildlife viewing in with hunting and fishing and ask them how important it is for people to have the opportunity to participate in these things. And a lot of people that like to view wildlife don't necessarily like to hunt or fish. And so I don't know how accurate that can be. And I'm also concerned why they would go all the way to Virginia to do the survey. Why not do it in the state of Vermont, UVM, for instance? And thirdly, there's no questions like chasing bears with hounds in June shortly after giving birth. That's a concern for many people in the state. So there are other concerns, too. But, you know, I'd love to know what they feel about that.
Okay, Lark, Commissioner?
Sure. Thanks for the question. In terms of lumping wildlife watching and hunting together, the charge to my department, dating back to Vermont's Constitution and through various statutes that direct our work, is to manage for healthy and abundant wildlife populations and their habitats, and then to provide a variety of recreational opportunities, including hunting, but also including wildlife watching and bird watching. So our goal is to have populations that are healthy and abundant that provide opportunities for all types of people to engage in recreation. I think we've done it quite well. We have managed with these tools to bring back the iconic species of Vermont, which at one point were no longer existent due to human activity. And we've done that quite well. There are, of course, differences of opinion, differences of views in terms of what the right population is. People who deer hunt want to see more deer. People who want to raise hostas maybe don't want to see as many, or at least not in their backyards. And so there are those differences over what the appropriate populations are. We try to take as broad a view of that, but we're very fortunate to live in a state where a huge number of people, a huge percentage of our population, care intensely about wildlife and care about it in different ways and for different reasons. And that means that essentially we're disappointing most of the people most of the time. We try to first take that look at it from a population and a health of the population standpoint. And I think we've done quite well.
Lark, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to Keith in Stratford. Hi, Keith. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah. I'm a hunter and fisherman. I live in Stratford, Vermont, and I'm right down the road from Miller Pond. And my concern is the fact that the Vermont Fish and Game post when and where they're going to be dropping fish. And what happens is Miller Pond gets flooded for about 4 to 6 weeks with people, and the fishery is depleted. And, you know, by this time in the season, there's hardly any fish left. And not just that the fish are gone, but, you know, the trash left behind, the traffic, not just in the waterways, but, you know, coming down the road from there. And I just wondered if it's just a financial reason that they do this to get people to get more get their licenses earlier or what, but it's a pretty big problem around here, and I just would like to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Sure, I can take that one, and although Mark oversees wildlife, he may want to add some thoughts. You ask a great question because it's something that we frankly wrestle with within the department. When to post, when we're stocking fish, and how much notice, what type of notice to give. And it's a dilemma. Let me just first of all start by saying that where we stock fish are largely put-and-take fisheries. Those are fish that we, fish we stock so that people can catch them. And often in places where human harm from roads and railways and fields and houses and parking lots and all the other things we do as humans, largely places where the wild populations aren't sustaining a fishery, can't sustain a fishery. And so I think it's appropriate and right that we, when we spend public money and especially anglers' money to stock fish, that we give them some indication of where we're doing that and when, because our goal there is to have people catch fish. Having said that, we have made an effort to not post the exact dates or times and to give people a general knowledge but not a specific knowledge to try to address some of those issues that the caller alluded to.
If I can add to Keith, just from listening to your question, it's obvious to me that you're probably quite knowledgeable about fishing and hunting. I get that sense. What I found out growing up in a lifelong Vermonter and fishing, I love fishing in the spring, the summer, and the fall. I don't do as much as I do today as I used to as a kid, to be honest with you. But there are places, too, where we actually kind of secretly put fish in, and not only against people but against predators, you know, like cormorants on Lake Champlain. We'll use the ferry to stock that with landlocked salmon and lake trout to try to restore native fishery. But the other point that I've learned, and I can say this because I started to develop an educational program called Let's Go Fishing to try to introduce new people to fishing. Most of the people that get out there early in the year are probably people not like you. They kind of need some places to catch fish easy. These hatchery fish are a lot easier to catch than a wild fish, as you probably know. But I got to tell you also, though, is now is the time, and even though this is a little tough stress for fish this summer because it's so warm, but people who know how to fish can actually have some of their best fishing in these stocked waters later in the summer when these fish go into deeper waters or seek out the springs or the inlets where the water is cooler. And usually you're going to have fishing almost all to yourself in those places.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, Lewis Porter, who is the Commissioner of the Fish and Wildlife Department, and Mark Scott, who is the Director of Wildlife at the Department, and we're looking at some new survey results. Let's turn to Jan in Guilford. Hi, Jan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I haven't seen the survey. I'm not a hunter. I'm not a fisher. I live in a rural area. And so my neighbors have all seen a huge 300-pound bear wandering around our trails this week and today. I love it. That's great. I am not as afraid of a bear as I am deer ticks. It's a serious health problem with a Lyme disease. So I'm concerned about what you may be able to do with the deer hunting to increase that, and the population decreasing it of the white-footed mouse with coyotes and fox. How do you manage that in your department with other departments?
Great question, Jen. Just before you answer that question, Commissioner, let's get a quick call in from Anthony in Montpelier on the same subject. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Bob, and thanks to the Fish and Wildlife Department for the great work they do. I've lived in Montpelier for about 15 years, and before that lived in a more rural part of the state. And I have to say that in the last few years, I've seen the deer population, in my view, grow substantially and become more brazen. And I'm wondering what the department thinks about strategies for increasing hunting in some of the more urban areas of the state.
Commissioner, you touched on this earlier, that if you're a deer hunter, the idea of having more deer out there is probably a good idea. But as we see the conflict coming into urban areas, it starts to pose some problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll let Mark, who's much more knowledgeable than I am, weigh in on this. But I'll just briefly say that both callers make good points. Deer are incredibly important, incredibly valuable, incredibly respected animal in Vermont. We know from this survey that deer are the number one topic that people want to get information from us on, both hunters but also non-hunters. But having said that, we are worried as a department about the ability to manage deer herds, the deer herd, especially in places that are more urban and suburban, especially in places where there's a lot of posted land and not as much access for hunting. And at high densities, deer certainly can be related to the prevalence of Lyme disease. That's something that worries us at the department on an extremely personal level. I don't know that we have a single person in our department who works out in the field with any regularity who hasn't had Lyme disease at one point. So it really hits home for us. But we know that the managing of the deer herd, not preventing those very high deer densities, may have an impact on reducing Lyme disease. So I guess I would just say that I encourage people to and municipalities to think about other ways of managing that deer population through archery hunting, through allowing hunts of different kinds. As we see climate change coming to bear more and more on us, fewer harsh winters, it's going to be increasingly important for us to manage the deer in those areas.
Just to add to that, I think the commissioner kind of nailed it, and I actually want to thank these two callers. Bob, this is becoming a common theme for us that we're seeing from urban areas of people concerned with deer. Obviously, we mentioned ticks 5 years ago. You probably get a call. Everywhere I go today, it's on people's minds. Everybody gets affected. Your pets get affected. It's complex. It's probably could be related to climate change. It's definitely related to higher deer numbers. It's definitely related to white-footed mice, as the reader says. But it's also related to the health of the land, the forest out there. We're finding connections now between exotics. There are barberry and honeysuckle that may be supporting high numbers of deer ticks in those habitats. And that's a challenge we know for foresters all over the state of Vermont, to cut. How do you cut commercial timber without having these invasives come in the property? So just so folks know, we're on it on all fronts. We're doing everything we can to try to better understand it, to control deer numbers, to deal with landowners, how they can remove invasives from the property. We're working with the federal government. There's actually subsidy programs through the Natural Resource Conservation Service that landowners can get money to help make their land healthier, get rid of the exotics to do that. What we're doing right now is I just encourage people like these two callers, other listeners to do, is just stay tuned, keep in contact, let us know your concern, because we're going through a big, big game process right now as we develop. We're writing the next 10-year big game process plan, and that's a contract with the state of Vermont, our Fish and Wildlife Regulatory Board, and all Vermonters to figure out appropriate deer densities throughout the state of Vermont. But what's also important is we're going to be looking for new and additional tools to the toolbox to try to control deer numbers in urban areas like Montpelier. And obviously, people, the best thing they can do right now is support hunting. It may be even the forms of archery, but to allow people access to the land is actually going to be a number one issue for us.
Let's turn to Steve, who's calling from Waterbury. Hi, Steve. What's on your mind today?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I'm going to change what I talked about real quick here because of what was just said around the deer herd. So two points I want to make, so bear with me. First point is that the hunting of coyotes is ostensibly done for saving livestock, and the statistics show that they kill very, very few livestock. And talking to the wardens and talking to people in the community, people kill coyote because they want more deer to kill during hunting season. So I think the a controlled hunting season on coyotes is warranted. A second point I want to make is I'd like the gentleman to address this. The Fish and Wildlife Board is made up of all hunters and trappers. The Vermont population is made up of mostly non-hunters and trappers. So you call us the general population. If you want the general population to engage in what you're doing, then you need to bring the general population into the board to hear our voices and not just sort of take surveys and then push us aside, because your revenue comes from hunting and trapping licenses. And the question I'd have for the gentleman is, would you be willing to talk with legislators about getting revenue from hikers and birders, and have that fund the fish and wildlife so there's more of an interest from non-hunters and trappers?
Well, Steve, this is Lewis Porter. I'll take that last part first, because I've never said no to new revenue yet. I don't think I'd start now. I appreciate the call. A couple of points I'd like to make in response, and Bob will remind me if I miss anything here. You're right. Largely conservation in Vermont, wildlife conservation, is funded by hunters, anglers, and trappers to a great extent, and has been for years and years, not only in Vermont but around the country. As the number of hunters decline, we need to figure out where that support, that money to pay for wardens and biologists who, as we mentioned earlier, are helping the general public to almost the same level, if not the same level, that they are hunters, trappers, and anglers. So that is important. It's a good point. As for the Fish and Wildlife Board, Vermont's a little different in terms of our board. You don't actually have to have a license to be on our board. In New Hampshire, you do have to have a license in order to be on the board. But if a qualified person were to come forward and desire to be on the Fish and Wildlife Board, there's nothing statutorily that prohibits that. You're correct that the tradition has been, the history has been, governors of all parties have appointed people who hold licenses. And I think the reason for that is that the Fish and Wildlife Board in Vermont only oversees hunting, fishing, and trapping regulations. It doesn't oversee the non-game work that we do, which is to a huge extent what our department does now, the threatened and endangered species work, the habitat and lands work, the regulatory work, the law enforcement work. That is all overseen by me, ultimately, and then on from me to the Agency of Natural Resources Secretary and the governor. So the Fish and Wildlife Board has traditionally been appointed from those who hold licenses, I think, by governors, I think because the idea is that those who engage in those practices are the best bellwether to watch what the department's doing. As for coyote hunting, I actually disagree a little bit with the premise of your question, which is that coyote hunting is done ostensibly to protect wildlife. Coyote hunting, like various types of hunting, is done because of people use the fur in some cases, and because people enjoy hunting and like hunting, and hunting connects them to the land. And we have seasons on those animals which have healthy and abundant populations, coyotes included, bears included, deer included, moose included. And so I think that's why coyote hunting exists in Vermont and is legal in Vermont. I don't really think that it's primarily for livestock, as you propose.
Steve, thanks very much for your question. Let me look at one of the results of the survey that jumped out at me. And the question says, basically, is the department influenced by politics? 55% said that describes the department very well or somewhat well. How do you interpret that, Commissioner? I mean, it sounds like there are a lot of people who feel that policy decisions at the department are being made for, quote-unquote, political reasons as opposed to science-based reasons.
It's a great question, Bob, and one of those results that we picked out, I mentioned earlier that some of the results in this survey highlighted areas where we need to do some work and to examine things. Interesting about that one is that you can take that two different ways, I think. In one way, yes, we make many decisions at the department outside of those that are biologically driven. So the biologically driven decisions are preeminent for us and rule the day. Outside of that, we make a lot of decisions based on what people want. People want to have fewer bears getting in their compost, getting in their garbage. People want to have fewer deer car accidents. People want to see more deer or more bear because they enjoy hunting them. So these, in a way, that's a political decision, and I'm not afraid of that, or I think that's actually appropriate if that's the context. If, on the other hand, the supposition, the way people heard that question was that we are making decisions based on what the general public wants or specific people want and against scientific decisions, that would really disturb me because I have not seen that in the department, and that would be very worrisome. It's interesting that people's view of the department is that it's so guided by politics when you look at the satisfaction rates in this same survey. So general residents, not hunters or anglers, general residents say they're 40% very satisfied with the department and another 26% somewhat satisfied. And that's an increase from when we asked the same question in 2013. So I guess it's something that we're thinking about, that we're delving into and considering.
Let's talk to Eli in Burlington. Hi, Eli. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you for having me, Commissioner and Mr. Scott. I've met you both a few times, either at UVM or down in Montpelier. We're coming up on seasons here in a couple of weeks, and I am getting ready. I hesitate to say do battle, but there are a large portion of people on various social media groups who don't trust the department, who don't understand or believe that you guys are doing what you do for the sake of the animals, and who largely believe that, for whatever reason, I can't see how this could work, but you guys are doing it for the money. And that is, I haven't read the survey, but if there was a question like this, I would say that I wish there was something the department was doing to reach out to the people who don't trust you and talk to them and try to have them get your ear, to come across as, hey, we're trying to do the best we can for the animals and listen to the public at the same time. So I'm wondering if there's anything in the works to reach out to folks who are doubting you.
Great, great question. You know, this is we're active on social media. We're active by email, by Facebook, other ways of reaching out to people. And this is something we hear a lot. I would say that it's very interesting to me because we actually asked this question. What percentage of people believe the department is motivated by caring about wildlife? And 72% of general residents said yes, and 81% of hunters. But if you ask the same question or you see that same question that you mentioned on social media or from people at public hearings, where we do a lot of public hearings, if you see people come up to you at public hearings and talk to you, this is a perennial question. It comes up all the time. And at the same time, 26% of residents and 33% of hunters and anglers describe my department as out of touch. So it's a great question. I think that, look, managing wildlife in Vermont, caring for wildlife in Vermont, maintaining wildlife populations and restoring them is expensive business. We spend $23 million a year doing it, just in my department. That's not including U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the nonprofit partners, and others who do a lot as well. So it's expensive business. We hear this claim, it's all about the money. Well, I can promise you that I don't think there's a person in my department who wouldn't make more money doing something else. They do this because they care about wildlife. But in a way, it is all about the money. It costs money to employ wardens and put them in trucks. It costs money to hire biologists and to give them the training and expertise and knowledge and tools they need to do their jobs. So it is about money. I will say this. I can't think of a single time where our department has advocated against the scientific advice of our biologists. So you can say that there are sometimes cases where we go to the Fish and Wildlife Board and we say, you know, here are three different options and here are the pros and cons of each. So you can say that our biologists' decisions are driven by their understanding of the need for funding and money. But I don't think you can say that we are not operating on the decisions of our biologists.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, the Commissioner of the Fish and Wildlife Department, Lewis Porter, also Mark Scott, Director of Wildlife at the department. We're looking at the results of a new survey that came out today. If you're interested in looking at the results of the survey in some detail, two ways to do that. There will be a link to the survey at our Vermont Edition site, at Vermont Edition at vpr.net. Also, you can find it at the Fish and Wildlife Department website as well. So if you're interested in learning more about it, a couple of different ways for you to get some direct information and see the results for yourself. Two ways to do that, Fish and Wildlife Department and also at the Vermont Edition website. Let's talk to Dave, calling from Greensboro. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the program.
Bob, thanks for taking my call. Mr. Porter has been very critical of a survey done by the Center for Rural Studies at the University of Vermont that found 75% of Vermonters would like to see leg-hold and body-gripping traps made illegal. He could have asked the same question if he didn't like the UVM survey. Mr. Dudah, who works exclusively for fish and wildlife agencies, could have asked the same question, certainly in a way that I think Mr. Porter would have been comfortable with. Why didn't they ask that question on this survey?
Well, actually, we did ask a version of that question. I don't know if I've been critical of the UVM survey. I've certainly asked some questions about it because it's important and it's in my area of the world. I will say that every survey, the little bit I know about surveys and political polling would back this up as well. You cannot easily compare surveys that ask different questions and have different methodologies. So you can ask the same types of questions and you can ask the same types of populations, but it's difficult to compare across the two. We did ask a question about trapping. We asked if people supported legal regulated trapping, which is what we oversee in my department. And 56% of the general public said they supported that and 27% said they opposed. I know the UVM question got a lower level of support and a higher level of opposition. As you say, it asked if you support leg hold and body gripping traps. Somewhat different question. But I think both surveys have their point and got the results they got in a fine method. And I would encourage people to go to our website or the Vermont Edition site and look at the results of our survey. You can take a look there at the methodology and all of the questions and the error rates.
Commissioner, whichever the survey results you look at, you have a significant number of people who are concerned about trapping. Mm-hmm. So for the listeners today who have those concerns like Dave, what do you say to them? They think trapping is cruel on many different levels. So tell them why it's an important part of our wildlife programs.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think that trapping is very important to our wildlife programs in a couple of different ways. And I know that folks disagree with me on just about all of these in some way or another. But for one thing, trapping is an essential tool for our management of certain species, beavers being a prime example. Restoration of beavers was undertaken by my department many decades ago. It's been very successful since we worked with researchers to reintroduce beavers. Beaver populations are a huge benefit, a huge boon to the state of Vermont. They provide wetlands, they provide habitat, they provide flood protection, they provide water quality improvements. But beavers are as the old adage goes, very industrious, and they do come into conflict with people. Therefore, in order to maintain our roads, our houses, we need to manage that population, and trapping is the way we do it. So that's one important way. Another thing I think it's important for listeners to know is that I don't know of a single instance in modern history, which I define as when scientific management of wildlife has been the mode of the day, in which regulated trapping or hunting has threatened or eliminated a population. And that's, I think, really important. I should say this is in North America where we manage wildlife in that way.
Do you understand the problems that some people have with trapping?
Sure. There is no question that for that individual animal caught in a trap, that is the worst thing that's going to happen to it in its life. It is typically the end of its life if it's a target species. I will say that trapping has advanced greatly in terms of technique and method and also regulation, and I think made improvements over the years, partly with the help of trappers themselves, partly with the help of biologists like those who work in my department and wardens. But there is no question that trapping causes stress and anxiety and fear and pain for animals that are caught in that trap. I will say, I think the same thing holds for hunting with the rifle, hunting with arrows, raising livestock and taking them to slaughter, hitting a deer or another animal with your car. These are all things that we as people do that cause these things to happen to those individual animals. The charge to my department is to look at the population.
Let's get a quick call in from Zach in Montpelier. Hi, Zach. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. So I work for the National Wildlife Federation. We have a regional office here in Vermont, and I wanted to speak to the sometimes perceived conflict between game species and non-game. And I would only like to point out that often a lot of the work that you do for habitat really does benefit both game and non-game. So if you're clearing, if you're actively managing a forest, it can benefit turkey and deer and songbirds. So I think sometimes there's a perceived conflict when that's not already there. And then I'd also want to add one piece of legislation that National Wildlife Federation is working on nationally. It's called Recovering America's Wildlife Act. And it speaks exactly to that need to provide funding for non-game species. It would dedicate $1.3 billion per year for all of the state wildlife agencies to get ahead of threatened and endangered species and start some on-the-ground recovery. So I just wanted to mention that. I know Lewis is always looking for funding, and I think that's a great bill that would help him and a number of fish and wildlife directors across the country.
Sure, I agree with all of that. The bulk of our work these days at the department is on non-game species or on things that benefit both game and non-game species. Sometimes people think we're all about the game species. In fact, most of our work is on other areas, which sometimes comes as a surprise. And yes, Recovering America's Wildlife Act, it would be hugely important if it passed. And it has a diverse and unusual array of supporters, which maybe we'll give it a chance.
Got just a minute left. Commissioner, I'm wondering, we've been talking about social media today. If you look back over the last 5 years, 6 years, how has the explosion of social media affected your department?
Tough to answer that in a minute, Bob, but I'll try. Both ways, it has been a huge asset for us in terms of reaching out to people, disseminating information, especially information that needs to get out there quickly. If we have an emergency closure of some kind of season or something like that, or we have an error in something that we've put out, it's hugely helpful. I think it's also contributed to a view of hunters and trappers and anglers that isn't always positive when those folks post things that are ill-advised or post things of themselves doing things unethically, even if they're legal.
Well, that's a look today at how Vermonters perceive some of the issues involving the Fish and Wildlife Department. Again, if you'd like to see the survey, there's a link at Vermont Edition on the VPR website and also at the Fish and Wildlife Department website as well. Commissioner Lewis Porter, Director Mark Scott, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's fun.